can see Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We get news from Topps that they will be doing the NFL debut patch, much like we've already seen in baseball and basketball, with the Cooper flag looking to go for maybe $3 million or more. So the NFL and Topps made an agreement there. So for their first game, they'll wear the NFL debut patch. It'll get chopped off the jersey and put into cards. So I've no doubt that will be big time money as well. Now, NFL overreaction or reality, and we start with this. We have discussed this fella a couple of times today. Overreaction or reality, Jayshon Barham immediately becoming a force has been your favorite storyline of the Cowboys training camp.
Overreaction.
Ooh.
It's slowly becoming my favorite story. My favorite story is the George Pickens story. No story at all.
That's fair.
The fact that this dude's just going out there and saying, guys, button it all up. Let's get ready to rock. Let's have a great season. Make some cash. Hopefully win a Super Bowl along the way. That's been my favorite story because, Kevin, you couldn't come into this season having all the contract controversies that you had last year or the ones that the Joneses typically have. If you want to talk Barham right here, right now instead, that's perfectly fine, but you asked me that question,
yeah.
And that this specific story is the one that I, as we discussed yesterday, should be more surprised about, but aren't, because
right.
Kyle Yeomans told us. But
ooh.
Kyle Yeomans,
thank you.
He told us, chill out, guys. And everything like has gone so much better. So that's my favorite story. This Barham story, though, is. I'm starting to believe that like the Cowboys found a gem when we were like, hey, there's so like you are going to miss out on this position if you don't take this. And they were like, guys, just wait.
Unlike that pick of Caleb Downs, you know what I'm saying?
They were like, we got something figured out here, guys. We don't need Jacob Rodriguez. Remember that run of middle linebackers? I was at an event when it started happening. And I just threw my phone down. I was like, we lost every middle linebacker that exists.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Alec was thinking the same thing. All the middle linebackers are gone. And they're like, it's okay. We're taking a pass rusher. And he's going to play middle linebacker. And we were like, what? And then we watched film. And we're like, this could work. And now he's a beast.
By the way, I know he said it before, but do you think G-Bag will start off today with Gavin Dawson discussing Caleb Downs?
He will have an intelligent defense of it all.
People usually are okay with that, right?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, yeah.
You can't say something.
You can't say anything.
Unless it agrees. From the 817, George Pickens is allowing us to have the Barham conversation right now.
Oh, okay. I kind of like that. All right, Alec, we go to you. Overreaction or reality, Jayshon Barham immediately becoming a force has been your favorite storyline of Cowboys training camp?
Overreaction. I will tell you what mine is here in a second, but the reason I'm not picking this is because I already knew from a tweet from Joseph Hoyt on May 1st of this year. He said, Brian Schottenheimer said new Cowboys linebacker Jayshon Barham is someone you want in an Oklahoma drill. Joseph Hoyt asked him about the Oklahoma drill, and his response was, quote, we could do one right now, while staring down Joseph Hoyt. So he told Joseph Hoyt of the Dallas Morning News, you and me could do one right now.
I'm not going to lie. I would watch at least one episode of a buddy sitcom between Barham and Joseph Hoyt, because
yes.
It feels like they've had some fun little back and forth like this.
Okay, hold on, though. Barham tells you we could do one right now. Would you say, all right, let's go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No pads. Because you're standing there, no pads.
Great. I could have pads. I would still get destroyed.
Separated shoulder immediately.
Just think of the lights.
For me. What do you mean, what lights?
Likes.
Oh, the likes? Yeah. I mean, think about all the likes you got when Jesse Holly took you down.
Content, baby.
That's right.
But yes, my favorite storyline is actually that your secondary might be pretty good.
Oh,
dude,
it's
very enticing. It's and it's too early to bite in on this, right? It's just too early to be like, all these things are going to be good. You're still kind of going, okay, I got to see it. I got to see it live against big-time competition.
Overreaction or reality, current owners of football teams shouldn't go in their team's Hall of Fame. Now, you can decide how this decision was made, but Jeffrey Lurie is going to go into the Eagles Hall of Fame.
Oh, okay.
And that just feels like a weird time.
Can you imagine if Jed York was already in the NFL Hall of Fame? And they were like, oh, crap, guys. Because Jerry's in. And they're like, guys, do we leave it?
Yeah. I mean, sure.
But you know what?
I'm with the judicial system.
I'm with you on this.
Okay.
Let them continue to be famous.
Yeah, sure.
What if their fame gets better? Now you have more to add to the story. That plaque's already built.
Can you add to it?
I don't think so.
Anyone's ever added to a tombstone after the fact? Like, let's say you just wrote beloved husband because your husband died. And then you found out like he had been cheating on you with like 8 people.
Uh-huh.
Do you think would they let you go back and add like kind of a douche?
You don't want to do that. You don't want to go
back. I'm not saying you should.
Like,
I just, do you think it has happened?
Yeah, womanizer. Because you want your husband to be remembered as a great man.
I agree,
even if you find out something different.
The question remains, do you think somebody has added to tombstones?
Thousands
after
of
the
times.
Fact?
Spray paint, chisels, whatever it takes.
No, I'd need it chiseled in there.
Yeah, because spray paint can be wiped off by the dead person. Maybe like, here's besmirching in my name.
Maybe not that one.
I'm rolling over in my grave.
All right, overreaction or reality. This one I think is going to get some pushback. You could envision a world in which the Broncos missed the playoffs this season. Now, hear me out. They were an NFL best 11-2 in one score games last year, including at one point winning 10 straight. Their quarterback is coming back from an injury. Overreaction or reality? You could envision the Broncos missing the playoffs this season.
I think their offense is going to be better. I think this is an overreaction. But in the world of reality.
Wait, I'm sorry, what?
I think it's an overreaction.
Oh, okay.
But reality is that, yes, you can see that world happening. Not because of the Bo Nix injury. More about because I don't know how the defense is going to adjust to some of the losses they had in their coaching world. And maybe it's the same. Maybe it's exactly what it was last year with Vance Joseph. But defense typically doesn't just stay the same. So I will say I think it's an overreaction. Adding Jaylen Waddle, I think, is going to make their offense that much better this year.
Alec, what say you? Overreaction or reality? You can envision a world in which the Broncos miss the playoffs this season.
Overreaction. I don't think I can. I think they're too talented. They got better on offense, just on paper. We got to see what Bo Nix looks like coming off the leg injury. But I'm actually really excited to see what Davis Webb is going to do as their offensive coordinator. Since Sean Payton says up and down he is handing off play calling to Davis Webb, I want to see if he is.
But you heard what he said. He was like, but you know how you're the, you know, you're in driver's ed and you got the kid's the driver, but the driver's ed teacher has the brake. I'll be next to him. That's what he said.
Yeah.
So,
and it's just like Shoddy was saying that in a presser, I think last week that we carried here, where he was like, you know, Christian Parker is going to learn that he's not the head coach. There will be times that I will get in his ear and say, we need to rethink that. We need to look for something else. But, you know, for the most part, he is going to be on his own and he's going to be making a lot of the big time decisions. I hope it's that way because I think this could be a fun experiment that opens things up and brings some new life to that offense.
I promised I was going to bring up this prompt regardless of the Gavin Dawson tweet. Overreaction or reality? Sure, you'd be in on the Cowboys either way. But Caleb Downs is also must-watch TV for you. This existed before the tweet.
Overreaction.
Ooh.
Not yet. And we talked about it a little this morning. Like, that dude is a play wrecker.
Yep.
I don't know how many times I'm going to go, man, what a splash that was. But I know a lot of times I'm going to go, that was the correct play to make. Very Cooper Flag. And then we said that about Cooper Flag going into everything.
And splash, and splash, like, splash.
Guys, I was already ready for this.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's what's going to happen with Caleb Downs. But at the moment, I've been watching him in these practices, and I'm like, okay, good. He gets it. He understands it. He watches film probably more than anybody out there. Him and Sean Lee, it's probably those two watching film all the time, right? Sean Lee still to this day. What's the old adage, Sean Lee? You go to his house for Halloween and he's passing out film to kids. Same thing with Caleb Downs.
He's like, you're going to want to see that cover three.
Yeah, exactly. Match quarters here. I think that's where he's going to be. But I do think there are people that are so excited be right about him.
Right.
So excited to see him at this level. So excited to see what they saw last year on this level. So I think it's an overreaction for me. But I think for most of the people out there, this is a dead-on reality.
Alec, overreaction or reality to you? Sure, you'd be on the Cowboys anyway, but Caleb Downs is also must-watch TV for you.
Reality. I can't sit here and talk about this guy leading up through April and saying that he's probably the best player in the draft in my book, and regardless of where he went, not say that he's not must-watch TV. I have to back that up because I believe it. I still think that he was probably maybe the second-best player, if not the first, in this draft class. So I think he's going to be, and because I'm a football snob, he doesn't have to make the splash plays. If he's not getting thrown his way, I'm still looking for his jersey number.
Agreed.
To see how his coverage looks, and I'm still going to be applauding him.
Now, I brought this one up on Monday, maybe, but we didn't get to go all the way through with it. Overreaction or reality, at least four quarterbacks will be selected in the first round of the 2027 NFL Draft. Sports Illustrated has six going in the first round, with Arch Manning at one, Dante Moore at two, Darian Mentz out of Miami at three, C.J. Carr from Notre Dame at four, Jaden Maivia from USC at 16, and Drew Mestemaker at number 22 out of, I'm just going to say, UNT.
Don't credit that right now. Taven Jackson's the starter there.
Good point. All right, out of Oklahoma State. So you only have to say four. Overreaction or reality, at least four quarterbacks will go in the first round of the next NFL draft.
I think four is a fair number.
Okay.
Six would be very ridiculous.
True.
Because some of these quarterbacks are going to play themselves out of it during this season. Their teams are going to play themselves out of it. Injuries have all sorts of stuff. We're not wishing that injury upon them. It just these are natural things that happen. I think four is a very fair number. What's fascinating to me, Kevin, about this, and I'm sorry that this kind of detracts this a little bit, but when I looked at this list that you were talking about here, it's offense heavy in the first round.
Right.
And Alec.
And Texas heavy.
Defense defined this NFL draft this year. Offense was like, I don't know, man, pick a receiver. You might get lucky. And one of them will probably get hurt in New Orleans. It was like one of the best players was on defense. And this year, this offense is where it's at. And like you just said, receiver heavy, with Jeremiah Smith leading the way there.
Yeah, Jeremiah Smith might be the best wide receiver prospect in several years. He would have been the top wide receiver pick in this draft as well, to go along with the possibility of going at least 1-2, if not 1-2-3 on quarterbacks. And then I don't want to take out,
you
like
Jeremiah Smith so much.
He's awesome.
You'd take him over every first number one overall pick in the history of the game.
Okay, maybe not that far.
Oh, okay.
Over number four picks, I'd have to do more research. But like, can I, you know, then you have Cam Coleman as well.
Stud.
And so, yeah, there is a ton of wide receiver and offensive talent in this draft. All right, Alec, we go to you then. Overreaction or reality, at least four quarterbacks will be selected in the first round of the 2027 NFL draft.
Reality.
I think so too.
The truth is, there's a lot of bad teams in football right now. And there's a couple of teams already that have multiple first-round picks next year, so you could see a lot of maneuvering and jockeying for position.
The Jets have three!
They have three, and I could see them moving one of those to a team that wants to come up and get a quarterback.
Agreed.
One of those fringe playoff teams. Maybe the Colts regret Daniel Jones. Maybe some team that's kind of like on their level is like, there's a chance for us to move up a few spots and get our guy for the future, even though the future isn't even now. Like the Rams did with Ty Simpson.
Yes, I'm with you on that. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we move into the expressway where we've got some My Buddies an Idiot, but we will kick it off with Texas Rangers manager Skip Schumacher next right here on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan right now, brought to you by Trajan Wealth and Tropical Smoothie Cafe. It is time to chat with the Texas Rangers manager Skip Schumacher. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, guys. How y'all doing?
And we're doing okay, and I bet that's as good as can be expected after a game like yesterday. I want to go to that first inning where I realized the numbers look bad and there was an error, but what do you say to DeGrom, or what does he say when it's not like the ball was getting hit hard? It was an average exit velocity of 72.3, but the runs still pile up against you.
Yeah, I think there's just frustration, right? I mean, those hits are going to happen, but I think if you ask DeGrom, I think he's, you know, more upset about not being, you know, inside the strike zone, ahead of the count, putting guys away, you know, with his really good fastball hit or his slider. His slider just didn't have, you know, really the effect that it normally had last night, and I think that, you know, ended up being the kind of the story. You know, him going back out after the first inning was a little bit of a debate, you know, to be honest with you, with me, and coming off kind of that injury, you know, about a week ago, but ended up getting, you know, a quick second, going back out in the third and then into the fourth, and we just needed inning coverage and thought we could fight back. And we ended up fighting back. It just, we couldn't stop their offense, unfortunately.
What was the tipping point in that debate? Is it DeGrom just kind of saying, I'm okay, I can go?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, he was, I think, frustrated and didn't want to, you know, go out after one inning. I think that's number one. Number two, he knew where our bullpen situation was at. And, you know, after, you know, a 10-game stretch, day off, 9-game stretch, day off, it's, you know, we got a lot going on, you know, as far as innings on the bullpen. So making sure that he wanted to go back out there and try to, you know, at least give us five. And he did a really good job after that first inning. Going into second inning, I think it was like a 7-pitch, you know, inning. So we were kind of almost back on track and then just kind of got away from us after that.
I do feel like starting pitcher, Skip, do have a lot of badge of honors that they carry with them, but helping out the bullpen seems to be one that they take a lot of pride in.
They really do. They know what's at stake out there. They, you know, if they can get an extra inning, they know the residual effect the next day or the day after, and not having to use kind of a leverage guy in a down game is a big deal for the next day. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, effects when a starter goes, you know, either long or short in a good or bad way. And so, you know, for him getting a couple more innings, you know, believe it or not, really did save us.
You were talking a little bit about DeGrom struggling a little bit with that slider. And I know you were a position player, but do you know kind of what's going through a pitcher's mind whenever they don't have that pitch that they know they can get people out with and they don't have one of their best pitches, kind of what they're thinking?
You know, when I first came up in 2005, we had Dave Duncan, obviously, in my opinion, should be a Hall of Fame pitching coach. He told me, and Chris Duncan, you know, at the time was one of my good buddies, we came up kind of together, that a pitcher never knows exactly what they have coming out of their bullpen off speed wise. So they always try to establish the fastball, but they never know what the slider, curveball, changeup look like. So just remember that as you know, first and second inning, you're at bats. So I've always thought about that when I was a player and then watching it in the game, you know, seeing, you know, what our starters have right away is kind of a sign of, you know, when they need to make the adjustment either early on or later and what the other side is picking up. And you could tell kind of right away the frustration he had with his slider and kind of fastball command. And then, you know, couldn't really make the, you know, a total adjustment that he needed to make later on in the game.
The hitter probably tells you exactly what that off speed stuff's doing, huh?
Yeah, I mean, when you see I'm just saying, when you see these takes, you know, and kind of, you know, ball out of hand, you know that it's not just the typical spin and depth of the slider.
Yeah.
And so you have an idea right away.
Now, all that being said, how much worse did you feel like that Langford error made a lot of these problems?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I prefer guys to side on the, you know, on aggression, and I want you to be as aggressive defensively and on the bases as much as you can, but also be smart. And I think, you know, as a base runner, when you're on second base, you know, at first and second, and I think there was nobody out, you do freeze halfway on kind of that bloop single in left field when it's in front of you. It's like a really tough read as a base runner. And I think Wyatt knew that. And as soon as he got kind of a clean hop, and he kind of saw the base runner, you know, a little bit halfway, maybe three quarters of the way, he thought maybe he could have a forced out at third base. So I understood the mindset. Obviously, the throw wasn't ideal, and he'll tell you that. But I think the mindset was right of, you've seen it, you know, even in the World Series last year where it was kind of a short hop. They try to get him out at second base, or it might have been a line drive and they caught it. And, you know, Miguel Rojas made a really good pick to double him off. It's kind of the same situation. You're kind of in no man's land as a base runner. And I think that's what probably Wyatt was thinking, just unfortunately made a bad throw.
Can I ask you a question then also on, as base running goes? And this is, you know, very remedial high school baseball stuff, but it was always don't make the first or third out at third base. And I'm just kind of curious, the Berger was trying to leg out a triple and got that third out at third base. Is that where you're like, no, man, I love the aggression?
Yeah, I mean, I gave him the green light to steal the other day, and all of a sudden he thinks he's like, you know, base stealer, you know, this five-tool speed guy.
Vince Coleman out there, yeah.
It's unbelievable. And then I look up after, you know, he smoked the ball to center, kind of took a weird bounce and went to the wall, and I thought it was going to be a stand-up double, and then I thought, saw him going to third, I went, oh my God, here we go. And, you know, listen, he's playing against his old team. I'm sure there's something, you know, in back of his mind about that and trying to, you know, play as hard as he can with something to prove. And he tried to go to third. And obviously that would have been like a great spring training out, you know, like, hey, just roll it over, get through the inning, great swing, get the out, let's move on. But not during a game. I think I don't think we're going to see that too many times.
Okay, all right. You know, we'll keep an eye on it though for you.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll notice.
I wanted to go back to pitching for just a second because Rocker the other night, they're like, he had struggled. I think he was struggling the other night. It looked like his sinker and then his slider was a little low. But then all of a sudden he found it after that big moment where he had the bases loaded. What clicked for him?
Yeah, that's kind of my point, right? It's like you could tell that they were on the slider, you know, pretty early on with the swings they were taking. My point of like with DeGrom last night and compared with Rocker to the night before. Rocker made, you know, a really good adjustment. Obviously, the Brandon Nimmo home run really, you know, he was able to take a deep breath because that could have changed, you know, the game and the trajectory of the game as well. But after that home run, kind of settled down, him and Teague felt, you know, it was a little bit of a change of the slider of, you know, the sights as far as like where it started and where it should finish. And then made a fantastic adjustment. Again, I had a bullpen arm. I think it was Alexander going or Alstrom going in the third inning, you know, ready to face Peters. And then he gets out of that inning and goes into the sixth inning. So, which was again gigantic as far as where our bullpen was at the time. So, Rocker made a really, really good adjustment. This guy has made strides. You know, obviously there's been a few learning and teaching moments, you know, throughout the year, whether it was covering the bag or, you know, pitch selection, that type of thing. But you have to realize how many innings he has at the major league level in his career. It's not many. And we think he's this established guy, not you, but, you know, a lot of people, and he's not. So he's still learning. And I think it was a really big moment in his career, getting out of that big jam, getting into the sixth inning against a playoff caliber team.
Now, yesterday broke a string of 14 straight games from the Rangers starting pitchers where they've given up three or fewer runs. And I know the offense has picked it up in the last couple of games, but you kind of talked about this over the weekend, and you're like, it can be frustrating to have our offense go cold when those guys have picked it up when they really needed it. Have you ever seen any of the hitters talk to the pitchers or apologize for not, like, turning more of these performances into victories along the way?
I don't think it's like a team meeting or anything like that, but I think, you know, the team is very tight inside that clubhouse, and they always talk about, you know, picking each other up. It's not in a team closed door meeting, but, you know, they will walk by them and say, you know, we got you, or, you know, my bad or our bad, you know, we'll get you, you know, whatever it is, that type of language. But, you know, there's so many conversations off of the field that these guys, whether at dinner or at coffee the next morning. I was at breakfast and, you know, Evo had a bunch of guys, you know, talking through some stuff at, you know, at breakfast with, multiple teammates. He did that 3 days in a row as I was at the same place with other coaches. So there's always conversations that are happening. And I think that is a natural kind of, you know, conversation with offense and pitchers and, you know, trying to make sure that, you know, they know they got each other's back and when they're struggling.
Logan Ohapi had a conversation with the media a couple days ago when he talked about, you know, moving to the Rangers and going back to the minor leagues. And he was like, look, not only was I willing, but I needed is the word that I would use from it. And he's talked about how that's kind of like just re-sparked his love of the game and going out to the ballpark. And you've expressed those similar kind of emotions in the past. What's it like when, like, you're going to be there and you're going to do your job, but man, it feels like the game has sucked away your love for it along the way?
Yeah, this game is hard, as you know, and it's more than just a game for a lot of these guys. You know, it's, you got families to feed and bills to pay and a lot of expectations and, you know, media and whatever, social media, whatever people look at. So there's a lot of, on these players' plates that, you know, luckily I didn't have to deal with some of it when I was a player. There was no such thing as Twitter or whatever at the time. So, you know, now there's a lot of things that if you start reading into it, it gets challenging. So, you know, Logan, you know, was very, very open when we traded for him, how he wanted to come and work and asked, you know, different opinions and wanted to work on them in AAA. I mean, he was very, very open to the idea, wanted the mental and physical reset. Felt like it was going to be healthy for him and for us as an organization, which, man, you don't hear that from a guy who has hit 20 home runs 2 years ago and he's 26 years old, right? Like, that just does not happen. And he wanted it. And credit to him, he went down there, worked, felt like he found something on the catching side and hitting side. He's not a finished product. You know, he's still working every day at the catching right now. He's DHing, you know, for the most part for right now, but I think there's a chance he gets a start here soon behind the plate, and everything so far has been good, but, you know, still has work to do, but definitely healthy for a player to have that reset, especially when he's open to it. It goes a long way.
And I think, you know, a player that we all have kind of been waiting for him to do what he's doing, that kind of experienced that, Kevin, would be Justin Foscue.
Yeah.
And the up and down nature he's had with this club. And then this year, as you told us, you were like, he has a home right now for sure. And he just seems like whenever he's in that zone, he is one of the most fun hitters to watch.
He is. And I mean, what an at bat he took against Jordan Hicks last night, throwing 100 miles an hour in a slider that he hits, you know, down the line for a home run. I mean, like, it's just what he's doing right now, and just missed one in center field, you know, the at bat before, maybe the first at bat. So he had some really quality at bats last night. He's in there tonight against a righty, which, you know, he hasn't had a ton of starts, but, you know, at this point of the year, you know, we're trying to, you know, play the hottest hand we can and get these guys going to, you know, as far as on the offense. And Justin provided that. And he's had some, you know, quality defense as well, you know. So he's really, really impressed me, you know, with his bat quality since he's been called up. You know, obviously we've given him a lot of lefties, but, you know, there's some righties that he's – I mean, the other night when he took Ben Joyce the other way to get the guy over – that wasn't easy, right? So he's showing some real signs of being a complete hitter, and he's been a real bright spot for us.
Now, when you talk about playing the hot hand, kind of, it feels like the fortunes month over month of Foscue and Evan Carter at the plate have gone in opposite directions when you look at what Evan has done this month at the plate. Are there anything particular in terms of his at-bats or approach from Evan Carter this month that has felt different? Because he really was rolling in July.
He was, but I would say that, you know, a lot of guys struggled in August, right? So it wasn't just one guy. It was a few guys that got cold at the wrong time, right? Multiple guys. And I've said this before, I'm hoping that multiple guys now get hot, which it's starting to trend that way. So, which, you know, could be at the right time, the last whatever 5-6 weeks of guys getting hot at the right time. And hopefully Evan is one of those. I think the biggest thing for Evan is he's learning right now that you can't out-talent the league. This league is talented with all kinds of pitch shapes and reports and everything else that they're attacking you with. The more that you play at this level, the more exposed you get and the more areas of weakness that show up, and you're going to have to refine your game. And that's what he's learning right now. And he's doing a good job of trying to bunt more, which he got a bunt the other day against a lefty, and he's trying to hit the other way more and not just pull side power. And he's trying to, the off speed pitches have been kind of giving him a little bit of trouble. So he's trying to back up the baseball a little bit more. And so there's, there's a lot that goes on. Again, Brandon Nimmo and JV have been working with him every day. He's healthy, which is also good news, playing a great defense in center field. But the hitting side is going to be, you know, work in progress, and he's definitely working. And I feel like the last few games actually has been pretty good. Double the first game of the series. The day before, he had a bunt hit and a double. So I think it's trending the right way. I'm hoping. I've said trending a lot this year, I feel like. I'm trying not to use that word because I get in trouble sometimes, health-related things. But I do feel like, you know, he has shown some signs of some growth this year, which is always good.
Sorry if I missed any announcement on this front, but is Jack Leiter going to have another rehab appearance? And you had said that he was looking maybe 50-50 for the bullpen. What are the factors that go into that?
Yeah, I think, you know, Leiter, he's going to pitch two innings out of the bullpen tonight at Round Rock, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So I think we're trying to figure out at this point of the year what is the best for him and for us. And he's never pitched out of the bullpen before. So want to give him some reps, you know, with, you know, kind of what that look is like, you know, getting ready after, you know, whatever, the third inning, and you got to get hot to pitch the next inning. You don't have this like half hour warm up before you get in. And how's he feel after that? Can he be a 2-3 inning guy out of the bullpen to hand it off to Lats? Throwing 100 miles an hour with real off speed. There's a lot of things that you have to factor in here. And can you build him up to 100 pitches at this point and feel okay about it as well? So, you know, there's some questions that we have, you know, conversations, I should say, with medical and CY and Ross, and kind of brainstorming of exactly what's best for us and the player. And we're going to see what it looks like tonight with Jack out of the bullpen.
Does that work in cooperation at all with monitoring the innings from Rocker? Because we've talked about in the past, and you just mentioned earlier, how many innings he's thrown this year in terms of like the rest of his baseball career.
Yeah, you know, again, the conversations happen all the time, you know, with the player and the front office and medical. Rocker is a big physical dude that feels good right now as far as where his innings are at, the amount of pitches. You know, we haven't pitched him more than 100 pitches, more than I think one time the whole year. And so, you know, he's recovered. Now, having said that, he's had on 4 days rest, I think three out of the last four starts, because we had to kind of push back DeGrom and kind of bumped up some others. And unfortunately, Rocker was one of those where he's been on 4 day rest the last three starts. So trying to back him up potentially this next start is or you know, keep him on his normal pace is kind of the conversation we're having internally. But you know, the recovery wise, man, he's feeling good. Throwing 96 miles an hour with a good slider still. So obviously still needs to develop that changeup. I'm going to still yell and scream at him about that. But I think he's, so far, health-wise, he's been okay.
All right, Skip, these are the last two. They're super easy questions. So, this is the last time we talk to you before I throw out the first pitch next Monday.
Okay.
Question number one, glove or no glove? I'm not going out there to, like, play catch, but I am going out there to throw. Do I take a glove with me?
Yeah, so I've debated this for years of, like, how old is too old to bring a glove to the field, right? Like, as a fan, you know, I'm not real sure what the age requirement or limit is on that. But I feel like when you are pitching off a mound, you absolutely should wear it. If you want to bring a glove, you bring a glove. If that's natural to you, it's okay.
Okay, all right. And then we built a pretty good rapport. I have no clue how this works, but if I requested you to catch the first pitch,
yeah,
would Skip Schumacher be willing to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. If you one hop me, just be ready. You know, there's going to be some backlash on these calls if you one hop me. So I just want you to be prepared. If you call me out, you better not one hop me.
Right now I'm high and in on righty batters. So that's what I'm working on, is making sure I get it down and up a little bit. So I'll be all right. I don't think I'm going to one hop you, Skip.
It sounds good.
All right, awesome.
Thank you very much, good sir. We will, I guess, see you on Monday then.
All right, look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
There you go. Texas Rangers manager Skip Schumacher right here on 105.3 The Fan, with which I interpret that as perhaps breaking news that he will indeed catch your first pitch. But What I'm thinking, I don't believe that you'll one hop him, but can you imagine a scenario in which he's on the show on that next Wednesday? And unfortunately, if they had lost, he's like, tough loss last night. He's like, yeah, tough like your first pitch. Like, it's going to be something like that he's catching it.
He is very concerned about not making it too. So that was.
How many of these has he seen?
Probably thousands in his career. Think about how many games he's been at. There's 365 games a year, it feels like. For guys who play baseball all the time. But I like the other day, I was talking to one of our sales assistants or sales associates about it. And the first thing she said was, are you going to make it to home plate? And I was like, why is everybody so concerned about this? Derek Holland texted yesterday, Kevin. He was like, don't worry, I got you. I have no clue what that means, but I need to go. I need to make sure I throw. So that's my manager right there saying, I'll be there for you.
And Heck yeah.
I think he can't wait to see all three of us out there, dude.
So I'm excited about that part from a outside of Rangers play point of view. For the Rangers themselves, lighter getting, it looks like they're shooting for two innings out of the bullpen tonight, and then they will reevaluate based on how he does, how he feels. That was interesting, a discussion about building back up this late in the season. So it kind of sounds like they think maybe logistically it might make more sense for him to come out of the bullpen. But as he said, there are multiple factors at play, but just keep an eye out for how lighter does at Round Rock tonight, because last go round they were like, ooh, it was a slog.
I mean, that in important information that he gave us right there is, I think it tells us kind of a lot of different things for sure.
Right.
But Kevin, how much of this team right now, this specific team, do you think, well, that's locked in? The only thing I think is that Ezekiel Duran is playing. Like, that's the only, like, and I don't even know where he's playing. I just know he's in the lineup and we'll build it all from there because everything else still kind of has to figure its way out in these last 30 games.
I mean, he said it himself. You got to play the hot hand.
Yes.
And you've seen Foscue going from meh in July to okay in August, so he's getting more opportunities. When you've seen the exact opposite from Evan Carter, I think that's going to lead to fewer opportunities.
That's an interesting thing because the other day somebody was messaging me and they were like, hey, why not hit Foscue against lefties also if he's the hot hand?
I get it.
And I looked at his OPS, it was like 1 point something against lefties, and then it was like 590 against righties, and I was like, this is why.
Yeah.
But if he's that feeling that, he's like, hey, hitter's going to hit. Go
Absolutely.
Up there and do that.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, and I feel like this is going to become a specialized edition of My Buddy is an Idiot. Now, of course, I could hit you with sports questions like, who do you think is the bigger idiot, or who is, excuse me, the idiot in this scenario? Is it Enes Kanter? Is it the WNBA? You can ponder questions like that. But then TCU was like, check out what we're going to do. And it feels like they have now taken prime focus. We found this out, I don't know, like 45 minutes ago. We were in the midst of some other things. But Alec, tell us the genius decision that TCU has decided to enact.
So our friend Nick Harris has tweeted, and this thing has already taken off. It's got over 150,000 impressions on Twitter, so people are having a field day with this.
While you say this, I want you to think about, do you think this is going to be rescinded sooner rather than later?
Yes.
Back to you.
And I even saw Joe Hoyt say, file this under decisions that won't last. But TCU has banned the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and pulled credentials over reporting of a locker room assault that resulted in a case filing with TCU campus police. Steven Johnson has been told that the decision stemmed from the victim receiving threats after the reporting, but Steven never identified the victim until the victim made a public statement on his own Instagram about the assault 3 days after the initial reporting.
And I saw that with him, and I believe it was his father, if I understand that correctly. First of all, we've talked about this a million times. The idea of threatening to kill somebody is a really weird take, especially if you're like, you got in a fight that cost somebody a spot on this team. I'm going to kill you. That is wild. Don't do that. And obviously it's illegal as well. So he didn't identify who the person was. It was that Instagram. So why is that being attached to him? And secondly, isn't Fort Worth Star-Telegram one of, if not the primary coverage mode for TCU football?
Mm-hmm.
The only full-time outlet covering TCU athletics.
What are we talking about? Well, at least they don't have a game overseas or anything like that.
Yeah. They're playing in Ireland.
Yeah, they're playing a game in Ireland, Kevin.
So the Fort Worth Star-Telegram reporter already has that trip set up.
Uh-huh.
But now he will not get a credential to the game. Is he going to hit up a scalper in Ireland, and that's how he's going to watch the game?
Just report on Ireland. Just go report about, you know, how the potatoes are back or whatever.
And turn it into a travel blog?
After the big famine.
That was, like, how many years ago?
And how things have kind of, maybe things have subsided since you two, you know, really tried to rock things up with the churches back then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you can cover games without being there. You're not going to get the same quotes. That's the definite. And that's something that I don't know where you would take a stand on this as a newspaper. Is, all right, we still want to make sure the game is covered, but you're not going to allow us in there.
Yeah.
So maybe we don't cover it at all for you. Well, what that's going to do is make some TCU newspaper, some school newspaper writer go, hell yeah, no competition, baby. They're all coming to me.
Oh, this is their time to shine?
Probably so. But okay. I don't like this at all.
No.
Not for the popularity purposes, but just for the sake of having the coverage for everybody, especially locally, especially if you're a Fort Worth Star-Telegram reader and subscriber, which we are because of Nick Harris.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks to him. That's the importance of this, is making sure you have good stories written by people that are in the know on this and that cover that beat. I don't like banning a reporter because they reported on something like this.
Yeah. So you're like, let's kick out the guy who may or may not have sucker punched that other kid and the guy who talked about it.
Yeah.
Like, if he said something factually inaccurate, well, then we can have that discussion. But he didn't even identify that player. And so the outcome is from other things. That is, sorry, sorry, sorry. Now, let me ask you about this.
Ask us.
Matt Snyder. He is a columnist for CBS Sports. His Snyder soapbox of the week: keep the losers and the teams with losing records out of the playoffs. So his suggestion, obviously they would not pick this up on the fly, is that, well, now the leader of the AL West is at a stout record of 66-66. But before that, there was a losing record that led this division. Let's say a losing record team eventually wins this division. He thinks if you have a losing record in baseball, you should not make the playoffs, and it should then go to the next best or the best record that was not going to be in the playoffs. And so we'd be kind of like getting rid of the point of divisions in general. We have talked about this over the years with the NFL. What do you think about that take, especially since it kind of feels like the AL West might be there?
Is he
an idiot?
I don't think another team should replace him.
Oh, just one fewer playoff team?
Yeah, if there's not enough winning records, no playoffs at all. The National League gets the World Series, you know?
Okay, well, wouldn't we just take out that one team?
Well, what if every team in the American League has a losing record? I know mathematically it's tough, but I bet you could make it happen.
Yeah.
Interesting. This is a wild scenario, Kevin. But what if we did it that way? Maybe there's only two teams that get to play in the AL and six or whatever seven in the West in the National League. I don't know. I think it's ridiculous also, but I also think it's ridiculous that you have teams that aren't good enough to win.
Yeah, it's a tough thing because you can make that rule and like you're not going to make it on the fly, but I also understand the logic of, hey, a team with a losing record shouldn't make the playoffs. I believe the worst divisional record winner ever was the Padres at 82-80, then led by one Bruce Bochy. But
did they win?
No.
Oh, they lost.
But I could see a scenario in which there's a losing record that wins this division. I really can't.
Dude, what if a team with a losing record wins the World Series?
Well, then that would really, really hurt MLB's insistence at keeping the season at 162 games, because they're like, why? Rangers won 79 games, and then they won the World Series. They didn't even get to a winning record before the World Series. That'd be kind of wild. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, and
let's give something away!
877-881-1053, caller number 7. will win a four-pack of tickets to go see the Rangers play the Rays on Sunday, September 6th at Globe Life Field. The first 10,000 fans at Globe Life Field for the Rangers game will receive a Body Armor Bath bobblehead. There's another thing. I was like, we're going to skip that word. So you can go to Rangers.com to buy tickets, or you can win them for free right now. 877-881-1053. Coming up next. Oh, C-block me.
We got a little bit of some Are You Better, but also by the end of the season, who will be the most excited Cowboy to be excited about next in the Fan?